John, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here tonight, partly because about 15 minutes ago I was on the A1, not wearing a suit, on my way down from doing my bit for democracy in Newark. Partly because this is a subject, as those of you who know me know, is very close to my heart, and one that I'm really delighted to be working with a number of you in the room to be promoting. And partly, just on a personal note, because one of the people who played a really big part in my interest in this subject, as a boy, a great patron, mentor and agriculturalist, great innovator, known to many of you, John Green, who died very sadly last week at the ripe age of 86. And the last time I saw him, I was speaking to the Institute of Farm Management in this very room, and he sat just there, 86, leaning on his stick, still nodding and grunting and urging more progress, more faster. I remember him as a boy in the fens of East Anglia, constantly innovating, designing ways that we could get the equipment to shift more vegetables more quickly through the packhouse, to do stuff better, cleaner, quicker, faster, constantly asking everybody who worked on the grading line, how could we do it better? And a great inspirer. So it's really lovely to be back this week, having buried him in a beautiful bit of Cornwall on Monday. John's asked me to say something about really the idea, the vision behind what we were trying to do in the agri-tech strategy, lest it not be obvious, and some thoughts on the implementation challenge that we now face 9 months on. I'm not going to talk through this slide. It's the disclosure of interest slide, merely to say that I come from a farming background. My first career choice was farm management, hence the work for Greens of Soham in the Fens as a boy. I broke too many pieces of equipment, crashed too many forklifts, and ended up being sent to Cambridge University. I think I still have a place at Seal Hain, should this career not work. I worked for the NFU in Parliament for 2 years after Cambridge, through one of the CAP reforms, the McSharry reforms, and then had a career in bioscience venture capital in Cambridge, most of which was about biomedicine. But latterly, partly as a candidate in rural mid-Norfolk, where I'm not yet described as well to the left, John, but maybe it'll only be a matter of time. My passion is to raise the standard of living in a very rural constituency. Average household incomes are only just over 20,000. It's a poor rural backwater, sat 20 miles from Norwich and 20 miles from Cambridge, two of the world's great centres of science and innovation. In the rest of the world, it would look like the San Francisco Silicon Valley cluster. In fact, Oxford, Cambridge and London joined up would look like a part of the Silicon Valley cluster. But my constituency doesn't feel anything like Silicon Valley. It feels like a very rural backwater cut off with some great farming businesses, but all too little understanding of the industry that surrounds them and the global opportunity that surrounds us all. So I come back to agriculture, as it were, both as a candidate, but also as somebody who's been in life sciences. And as we seek to get out of this debt crisis, it seems to me that life sciences should be something a bit broader than biopharmaceuticals. The application of our food, medical and clean tech, energy, science and technology in those three pillars, where Norwich Research Park is actually a global leader. And where those three pillars interact and the interactions, the multidisciplinary interactions, I think are extraordinarily exciting. I recently sat in a Lotus designed and built in Norfolk, powered by biofuels, not grown by land-hungry biofuel crops, but produced by genetically modified bugs breaking down agricultural waste, all designed and made in Norwich. Well, if that doesn't excite you, I don't know what it is. And I think that's life sciences working for us. And as the world needs to feed 9 billion mouths from 7 within 30 years, more or less doubling world food production with the same amount of land and half as much water and energy, seems to me that science and know-how base of how we produce food, more food from less, is an extremely valuable and important strength, an asset on the UK balance sheet, which we ought to be exploiting. My only interest, I've given up all my life science interests apart from one. I'm a non-exec director of Elsom Seeds, a little family-owned and staff, employee-owned seeds business in Lincolnshire. And I think the day MPs can't have any business interests would be a sad day, and we can talk about that over dinner. So I wanted to say something about really the message that I was evangelising to ministers in 2010-11, something about what we've then done and something about some of the implementation challenges that I think we face. I think it's worth, let's just go back a minute, it's worth, I think, just first saying that the significance of this, just in itself, this announcement, having come from a commercial farming background and had an entrepreneurial stepfather who built a business in the 60s and 70s, who said to me he thought I should leave the industry because its best days were behind it, and he didn't think commercial, progressive, ambitious farming had a future in Britain. It seems to me that for quite a long time, certainly two or three decades, we've treated agriculture not so much as a prime economic asset, a key industry in Britain PLC, but as a very important arm of sort of hedgerow and countryside management. And this coalition government has set out a series of very ambitious industrial strategies for sectors that it has identified as being key to long-term economic growth for this country: life sciences, aerospace, digital technologies, and a number of others. And the last was agri-tech. And I think, apart from anything else, it's a really important sign that government in Whitehall in Britain now recognises again that this is a key strategic industry, not just for the importance of producing more food, important though that is, but as a source of technology and a source of growth in technology businesses and venture capital and IP and intellectual property transfer and global trade. You don't really need me to remind you what a major industry it is, but a lot of people in Parliament do. British farming is the biggest bit of our manufacturing sector, vast contribution to the UK economy. The hedges are pretty and the fields are green, but it is an industry producing huge value for this country. And I'm not going to talk through all these bullet points. You can easily spin through them as I do. But we also have a major problem, which is that self-sufficiency is actually declining. And that isn't really the only or even the main issue, but productivity is not rising anymore. And if we're going to be a crucible of innovation to help the world tackle that grand challenge, then we need productivity to be rising. And given the extraordinary rises in commodity pricing, we need to be able to produce more from less. And of course, it's a function of some major commodity pressure around the world. Climate change, howsoever caused, is changing global geography and the geography of crop production. We've got massive water pressures, population growth, and huge land pressures. And of course, they are, as you well know, fueling huge geopolitical tensions. And in fact, if you scratch beneath the surface of many of the geopolitical hotspots around the world, a lot of the sources of Al-Qaeda, radicalism, and recruitment, you normally find a food or a water or a land shortage. And many of those geopolitical tensions are, as you know, actually resource tensions. Really, I think the starting challenge for this piece of work is Sir John Beddington's Foresight Report, which landed with an almighty thump on the doormat of government, more or less the first day after the coalition was put together. In a beautiful piece of timing, it was a wake-up call, just pointing out that the world does have to more or less double food production in 30 years, and we need to get to it. And whilst the numbers are very depressing, I think anyone who worked in this sector or studied the history of mankind will not be depressed, because the question, how are we going to feed the world, has challenged us before. I'm not quite old enough to remember these at work in the fields of Norfolk, but I know people who do. And the truth is, we've come huge strides in quite a few decades, and I suspect, like you, are profoundly optimistic that by harnessing the innate and glorious creativity of mankind and womankind, and the power of technology, we will look back on this particular global grand challenge as another Malthusian challenge that we got over and dealt with. And really, this strategy is about that very big global challenge of producing more from less, and doing so in a way that excites the consumers of food and excites those who, in the political debate about agriculture hitherto, have viewed it as something perhaps either not relevant to them or relevant because it was to do with the countryside under threat. We want people to understand that this sector is doing extraordinary things to produce more from less, and therefore to produce, to enhance environmental sustainability. And we want consumers to be proud and confident that anything produced in a British supply chain will be produced to the very highest standards that they can have confidence in and trust in. And it's not just at all about GM and plant science, very important though that is. And in fact, when we launched the strategy, we made a specific point of making sure that Owen Paterson's key seminal speech on GM and Europe, a subject, as you know, I'm very exercised by, was not part of this, because we didn't want this to be the media rolling their eyes and saying, oh, it's the GM thing again. We wanted this to be every bit as much about satellite-guided equipment, precision farming, engineering, informatics, smartphones, low chemical use, and accurate 21st century progressive farming across all sectors. And you've got on there cereals, mushrooms, dairy, and lettuces. The bottom right is extraordinary. If any of you have been to G's in Cambridgeshire Open Day, that's a lettuce rig. There's no driver in the tractor, which is slightly disconcerting when you first see it, because it's guided by satellites, and it's planting a million lettuce seeds an hour, seedlings an hour. Anyone worried about unemployment being caused by this technology can relax, because there are about 15 people working off the back of it. And there's an interesting skills challenge in there, because very few of them are from this country, not because the company didn't try to get them from this country, but because there aren't that many people in Cambridgeshire who want to go and work in the fields anymore. And one of the challenges we have is to get youngsters excited by this and realising that if they get to work behind one of those, they won't work there the whole of their life. It'll be a stepping stone into a really exciting career. And I come back to the skills in a moment. So my message to ministers really was, well, we face an extraordinary opportunity and a challenge. We are, after all, the home of the agricultural revolution. In fact, of course, it was my county of Norfolk. We have a world-class food and farming sector, a hugely well-respected agricultural R&D base. Turns out government spends not 10 or 50 or even 100 million a year. It spends 450 million a year on agricultural R&D, but nobody's responsible for it. It's cut across 21 different pie charts, and there's no central strategy. And part of our argument was, well, let's look at that. Let's pull it out onto the table and let's talk to the private sector about whether we're spending it on the right things and whether we can leverage in more from the industry. And it's about tapping into those vast global markets. But we have a problem, which is that our science base, brilliant though it is, has become quite cut off actually from our progressive farming industry and those global markets, not well integrated, and there's been no core strategy, vision or business plan for it. So huge opportunities to attract big investment into our science base, to generate more IP and technology transfer and spin-outs, and to drive up the competitiveness and productivity of British farming, and to use that to tap into emerging markets and to grow our bioeconomy and that broader life science cluster. And there's a whole series of challenges down the right-hand side which are facing the industry which it needs to deal with. So the strategy was launched last July. It feels like about 10 years ago. It's worth reminding ourselves it is only actually 9-10 months. And really the core vision at the heart of it was to integrate these three pillars. Pillar one, the science and the innovation pillar, which in my mind is over on the left, which is about deep science in the laboratory, but it's also about close-to-market technology and innovation. To integrate that far better to the supply chain, from both the windiest outpost of the supply chain, the lonely Hebridean sheep farmer, right up to our global brands taking food out around the world, and then to link that to the extraordinary global markets out there, both the global markets at the top with extraordinary petro and mineral dollar capacity to invest in our science, and perhaps more importantly, the global markets at the bottom of hunger, and those people who within 20, 30 years will have developed into a more Western style of life and will have an aspiration to live and eat more like us as well. I had a salutary moment 3 years ago. I sat at a dinner in Cambridge next to the Minister for Food Security from Qatar, and over pudding I coughed gently and asked him what his budget was, and it's a very, very, very large number, beginning with a B. And when I asked him over pudding wine how much he was thinking of allocating to the UK, he said, to my huge disappointment, nothing. Nobody has been to tell me what's available. Well, whatever else should happen by the end of this, James Townsend will have been to see him with his team, and we will have banged the drum and explained what there is here to invest in. This is about pulling in those investments into our sector as well as exporting our food and agriculture out. So the flow in and the flow out, two vital parts of it. Having come from the private sector, I've learnt in public sector it's really important to get everyone focused quite early on what success might look like, or else there's a huge danger of success looking like a lot of meetings. So here was my list. Here was my list of things that I think it ought to look like. I'm not going to talk through them all, but I hope that in a year or two we can look back through them and tick some of them off. I don't think we'll tick them all off by any means, but I think it's really important that the industry sees delivery, but it's equally important that the industry picks up the baton and runs with it. If we stand a chance of going back when the public finances are returned to more health to the Chancellor, we need to be able to show that we invested this first 160 or 70 million and leveraged in at least that, if not quite a lot more, from these global businesses and countries and sovereign wealth funds, and we're now building a world-class cluster. Crucially, this is not just a strategy for Department of Business, the NFU, and the ministers. It needs to be a strategy, and is very much a strategy designed to bring in all the parties in this. Our huge research and science base, so obviously the global ag bio companies with big allocations in this space, our progressive farming companies, which isn't to say that the rest don't matter at all, but as we all know, it is the 80-20 rule. It's the 20 who've got the capital and the expertise and the professionalism to drive this, and very quickly the rest will follow. And we are investing in their ability to follow and their ability to see what's worth following. It's about the food industry, crucially, a competitive sector, hugely competitive, operating often on very tight margins, but a sector that we think if we brought them to the table, given that they do invest in their own R&D, might well be able to invest in some pre-competitive R&D and at least guide this process and make sure we're investing in the right things. The charities, as in the biomedical sector, have a crucial role to play, both the big and the small, and it's about those sovereign wealth players. So four measures, I'm going to spin through them very, very fast. I'm hoping that within the year, people are screaming when they see this slide because they've heard it all before, but I don't think we're quite there yet. The Agritech Catalyst Fund was modelled specifically on the Biomedical Catalyst Fund, which I helped put together for the life science strategy. The idea was a really simple, smart award type scheme that anybody could fill in with a pencil, an hour between tractor shifts. You didn't need a PhD in bureaucracy to do it. And the idea is that if you've got a technology, an innovation, anything that is protectable and helps to produce more from less, and you're going to do it here in the UK, you're eligible. Everything from 50k to 2 or 3 million across the sectors. And we wanted people to start thinking, what could I do in my business that might be eligible? And it's completely non-dilutive. This is not venture capital. You're not going to get a man from the ministry sitting on your board or around your kitchen table. All you're required to do is match fund it and show that you have a business plan to pull in the match funding, and you've got a protectable asset that you're going to exploit. And bids are open, first funds are out, money is hitting the ground, and it's beginning to really catalyse some interest. And I'm delighted that five specialist VCs have been to see me and been to see officials and talked about making the UK, opening an office here and building a cluster here to help drive this sector. Secondly, we've secured £90 million from the Treasury to invest in a series of agricultural innovation hubs or centres. The idea here is to create places where the deep science expertise that we have in our great research institutes can be helped to be brought out into the field and into the sector. So they are both virtual and physical. We want them to be places where the aspiration would be, if you're farming in Britain, you within an hour, once or twice a year, could get to a place and see world-class innovation relevant to you. And it's about linking into the grassroots hubs, the agricultural colleges, the agricultural societies, so that the county shows become, again, not just a celebration of 18th century innovation, but 21st century innovation. And youngsters are inspired by this world-class industry, and they're actually trade shows, trade fairs for science and technology. And we decided the first centre would be in agricultural informatics, to try and establish a lead, a global lead for the UK in this extraordinarily exciting field of the application of big data to sustainable, highly productive, low environmental impact modern farming. And the key is that these hubs and centres are going to be industry led. This is not about government telling the industry what's needed. We want the industry to come back to us, grab the money and run with it and make something happen. And obviously I would tell you, wouldn't I, that I think the most exciting cluster is the one in Norwich, but I do appreciate there are others. Not least, I mean, Norwich is obviously world-class, particularly in terms of plant science and in terms of some of the environmental technology, the clean tech, and the gut work, the model gut work and the nutrition work at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, which is hugely important. But Harper Adams is building a hugely exciting cluster in robotics and engineering, and there's some wonderful work going on in animal science up in Scotland and all around the UK. So there are clusters and hubs like this that we want over the next few years to get funding and to become recognised as world-class centres. The third, as I mentioned, is this Institute of Agricultural Metrics. I'm not going to talk about this in detail, other than to say that the research we did in putting this strategy together suggested that around the world there is a very fast-growing industry sector around the application of data and information in 21st century agriculture, both in terms of helping to drive policy, but also in terms of actually commercial applications. And there are data in agricultural informatics spin-outs in the UK, working for companies here, helping progressive businesses here apply agrochemicals more accurately, look at in-field disease patterns, look at water, soil, using satellite and other technology. But it's also about aggregating the data that we've got, the agronomic data, the banking data, the climate data. And our vision is a centre of excellence somewhere in the UK, which is where the Global Conference on Agricultural Metrics of Sustainability takes place. It's where we set the international standard. And we think if we can take a lead, then we'll put Britain at the forefront of this over the next few decades. And the last piece of work, the last major project is on this emerging markets. And Justin Greening from DFID put £10 million into a catalyst fund for technology transfer into emerging markets. There are various projects being looked at. The idea is that we want to demonstrate to the public that British agricultural science innovation isn't just of interest for maximising profit in the British supply chain, important though that is, but equally it's part of taking British expertise out to help the world feed itself and to help the British science and technology in that global challenge. Well, it won't surprise you to know that I think the real key to success, from my opening comments, is actually in people. We can have as many strategies as we like. God knows we've got quite a lot in government. But unless we inspire a generation to not do what I did and leave the industry, but to be excited and go to our great agricultural colleges and to see it as a world-class career, not as a backwater, but as a really exciting sector. And some of our younger farm managers in this country and the people who are building some really exciting businesses, we need to celebrate them. They're busy people, but we need to tell their stories and we need to inspire a new generation, not just of business leaders, but of also technologists, of designers, of technicians, and of employees on the farm. And I was asked to give a talk recently on how I think farming is going to change. I mean, I think we're going to have to start thinking about farm workers with PhDs, farm workers in the next 20, 30 years with, you know, six-figure salaries. Our farm workers are already hugely skilled and they're going to become more and more skilled and professional as this sector embraces these technologies. I'm definitely not going to talk through this slide, other than to flag perhaps bottom right, second from the bottom, the question of EU regulation. Part of the focus on global markets is that we recognise the EU is becoming an increasingly unhelpful jurisdiction in which to do agricultural innovation. It's a subject I'm doing work on with another hat on. You know the government has come out and set a very strong message on GM, and not just GM, on the application of genetics more broadly in agriculture, and made a very clear statement that in the review of powers and the review of our relationship with the EU, if we can't get progress on this, we would look to repatriate agricultural biotechnology as a UK jurisdiction, so that if Europe decides to embrace the dark ages, we won't be locked into that with them. But I am not at all suggesting that is the best outcome. The better outcome would be to make Europe a progressive crucible, a driver, once again, as it's been in the Enlightenment, for science and technology in agriculture. So my last slide, I think this is, some thoughts on priorities for this year. I put industry leadership first because I think government's actually done its bit now. I don't think it's over for a minute, but government has taken a lead, has set out a strategy, has put some money on the table, and it's now absolutely crucial that the industry steps forward. There's money dangling. Money isn't everything, but there are ministers dangling, there are officials dangling, everyone wants to make this work. And there's a huge opportunity for industry to step in and show some leadership and put some co-investment and build something really exciting around those centres, around those catalyst projects. It's about that UK leadership in metrics. We need a global conference hosted here in Britain. Nobody's really taken the lead. So exciting work in the US, but there's an opportunity for us. We absolutely need to tackle the European regulation question. I know the FST has looked at it on other evenings and other events. I think that centre of metrics, we actually need to build it. We need to put it down somewhere. We need to put people in it, make it real, and start showing that leadership. We definitely need some early wins, both on inward investment and on commercialisation and on industry leadership. And I think possibly the most important thing of all, we need to be investing time and some resource in telling this story to the public, that 21st century agriculture is something to be excited about, that Britain is leading it, that it's about clean, green, modern farming systems that will produce more from less, It's about supply chain transparency. It's about being able to walk into any retail outlet and have confidence that if it's been grown in Britain, it will have been grown to the very highest standards, and that transparency and the use of data down the supply chain can give you the confidence in it, and you can be proud, again, of what British science and innovation in agriculture is doing. Thank you.